So today, we're continuing our study with Nehemiah chapters 3 and 4. And for your cultural enrichment here, I have a bas relief that's from ancient Persia. And it one of those five individuals is Nehemiah. Anybody want to take a guess who?
The one with the cup?
Nope.
The one with the
king? Nope.
The one with the
cup. So he is... the third one, right there. So, depicted is Darius. Behind him, the two highest people, which I guess are indicative of their position, is his son Xerxes. And at this time that this carving was done, they were basically co-rulers, so they're at the same height. And from their dress, you can tell that they're Persians, and the two guys on the ends are Medes. You can tell by their dress, the rounded hats, their pants. The third one, Nehemiah, he doesn't have a cup, but what he's got is the symbol of his badge of office, if you will, which is the towel for the holding the cup and wiping and all that stuff. And because he has the covering on his head and no beard, we know he's neither Mede or Persian, and because he has no beard and his face is covered, according to this depiction, he was probably an eunuch. So there you go. All right, advance. So we're going to read through the 30 verses are so quickly in Nehemiah chapter 3. This is the actual rebuilding part, who Nehemiah gives credit to. And then we'll come back and look a little bit about it. So hopefully I can pronounce the names, we'll see. Then Eliashib the high priest rose up with his brethren the priests and built the sheep gate. They consecrated it and hung its doors. They built as far as the Tower of the Hundred and consecrated it. Then as far as the Tower of Hanel, next to Eliashib the men of Jericho built, and next to them Zakur the son of Imri built. Also the sons of Hanessa built the fish gate. They laid its beams and hung its doors with its bolts and bars. And so pay attention through here. There are areas where they built and rebuilt, and again from the destruction of Nebuchadnezzar, some portions they had to totally rebuild. And next to them, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Koz, made repairs. Next to Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, the son of Meshabel, made repairs. Next to them, Zadok, the son of Benai, made repairs. Next to them, the Kohathites made repairs, but their nobles did not put their shoulders to the work of their God or their Lord. Moreover, Jehoiada, the son of Peshiah, and Meshulam, the son of Besoida, repaired the old gate. They laid its beams, hung its doors with its bolts and bars. And next to them, Melatiah, the Gibeonite, Jadon, the Marathite, and the men of Gibeon and Mizpah repaired the residence of the governor of the region beyond the river. Next to him, Uzziah, the son of Hariah, one of the goldsmiths, made repairs. And next to him, Hananiah, one of the perfumers, made repairs, and they fortified Jerusalem as far as the broad wall. And next to them, Rephaiah, the son of Hur, leader of half the district of Jerusalem, made repairs. Next to them, Jedidiah, the son of Harumphah, made repairs in front of his house. And next to him, Hattush, the son of Hashbaniah, made repairs. Melijah, the son of Harim, and Hashub, the son of Petheb Moab, repaired another section, as well as the Tower of the Ovens. And next to him was Shalom, the son of Halabesh, leader of the half-district of Jerusalem. He and his daughters made repairs. Hanum and the inhabitants of Zanoah repaired the valley gate. They built it, hung its doors and its bolts and bars, and repaired 1,000 cubits of the wall as far as the refuse gate. Elijah, the son of Rechab, leader of the district of Beth Hasurim, repaired the refuse gate. He built it and hung its doors with its bolts and bars. Shalom, the son of Kolhoze, leader of the district of Mizpah, repaired the fountain gate. He built it, covered it, hung its doors with its bolts and bars, and repaired the wall of the pool of Shelah by the king's garden, as far as the stairs that go down from the city of David. After him, Nehemiah, the son of Abzuk. This is not Nehemiah. There's actually three Nehemiahs listed in Ezra and Nehemiah, and he is not the author. Okay. Leader of the half-district of Beth-shur made repairs as far as the place in front of the tombs of David, to the man-made pool as far as the house of the mighty. After him, the Levites under Rehum, son of Bani, made repairs. Next to him, Heshbiah, leader of the half-district of Keilah, made repairs for his district. After him, their brethren under Bavi, the son of Henadad, leader of the other half of the district of Keilah, made repairs. And next to him, Ezer, the son of Jeshua, leader of the Mizpah, repaired another section. Whoa. You just want me to update software. I'm glad you didn't see that. And next to him, Ezer, the son of Jeshua, leader of the Mizpah, repaired another section in front of the ascent to the armory at the buttress. After him, Baruch, the son of Zabai, carefully repaired the other section from the buttress to the door to the house of Eliashib, the high priest. And after him, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Koz, repaired another section from the door of the house of Eliashib to the end of the house of Eliashib. And after him, the priests, the men of the plain, made repairs. After him, Benjamin, Hashub, made repairs opposite their house. After them, Azariah, the son of Masai, the son of Hananiah, made repairs by his house. After him, Benui, the son of Henadad, repaired another section from the house of Azariah to the buttress, even as far as the corner. Palal, the son of Uzai, made repairs opposite the buttress and on the tower which projects from the king's upper house that was by the court of the prison. After him, Pedadiah, the son of Parosh, made repairs. Moreover, the Nethinim, who dwelt in Ophel, made repairs as far as the place in front of the water gate, toward the east and on the projecting tower. After them, the Tekoites repaired another section next to the great projecting tower and as far as the wall of Ophel. Beyond the horse gate, the priests made repairs, each in front of his own house. After them, Zadok, the son of Immer, made repairs in front of his own house. After him, Shemaiah, the son of Shechaniah, the keeper of the east gate, made repairs. After him, Hananiah, the son of Shelemiah, and Hanun, the sixth son of Zalph, repaired another section. After him, Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, made repairs in front of his dwelling. And after him, Melchijah, one of the goldsmiths, made repairs as far as the house of Nethim, and of the merchants in front of the Mitkat gate, as far as the upper room at the corner. And between the upper room at the corner, as far as the sheep gate, the goldsmiths and the merchants made repairs. So that's documents. And there's actually some order here that I want to go through. Here's a depiction of what the city looked like, the walls that they were reconstructing. And all the way around would be about 2.5 miles long, and it contained about 220 acres. And Nehemiah's account, he references these 10 gates, which I've highlighted here. And he actually, through his an account, starts at the northern wall and works his way around counterclockwise. So verses 1 through 5 basically cover the northern wall. 6 through 13, this eastern or western wall. And then the remainder of the chapter covers the eastern wall. So I want to go back and pick out some things that we read through. First of all, Nehemiah found it very important to list specifically each family that contributed to this rebuilding. And there were probably other families, but these families and groups took a large portions of it. And of course, since he basically made the loop around the entire, he could have started anywhere, but instead he chose to start at the sheep gate. Anybody want to know why he thought that was the best place to start? basically, because that's where the high priest started, right? That's the focus. And it's called the Sheep Gate, likely because, or most agree, because that is where they kept the sheep on the northern side of the wall there that they would bring in for sacrificing. The temple was actually up in the northeast corner. Then Eliashib, the high priest, rose up and his brethren and built the Sheep Gate. They consecrated it and hung its doors, and they built as far as the Tower of the Hundred and consecrated it in the Tower of Hanel. And then verse 2, next to Eliashib, the men of Jericho built. So not only those that came back with Ezra and Nehemiah were there, but you'll see as we go through it, there are people from all the surrounding cities, or many of them, that have come and are helping rebuild in this effort. And they rebuilt up to the Fish Gate. Fish Gate gets its name, most likely, they think, because that's where they sold the fish. You think this is the northern wall, and to the north is Sea of Galilee, so it all makes sense. Let's see, what do I want to pick up? And next to them, Meremoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Koz, made repairs. Down to verse 5 is what I want to pick up. And next to them, the Kohathites made repairs. Anybody know what the Kohathite is? Oops, I'm getting ahead of myself. Here, again, is the description. Specifically, look for the Sheep Gate and the Fish Gate, which we just looked at. In between are those the two towers, and these were fortification towers. And basically, they used archers and slingers, people with spears and slings and other means to protect those gates. Okay, so now going back to verse 5. The Tekoites made repairs. Anybody know what a Tekoite is? Basically, they're just people, again, from a city nearby, Tekoa, which is about 12 miles to the west of Jerusalem. And you see here it says next to them, the Tekoites made repairs, but their nobles did not put their shoulders to the work of their Lord. And so there's quite a little bit of debate about this, but basically the overall, I think, belief is that as it's so close to Jerusalem, the leaders, most likely were fearful that once Jerusalem was rebuilt, their city would be vulnerable to attack. And so their heart wasn't in the repair. But that was, again, only for the nobles. It implies here that the rest of the people of the city more than made up for what the leaders didn't do. Moreover, Jehoiada, the son of Pasha, and Meshulam, the son of Beshaddai, repaired the old gate. I didn't find much exactly on specifics of that old gate. Jumping down to verse 8. Next to him, Uzziel, the son of Hariah, one of the goldsmiths, made repairs. And next to him, Hananiah, one of the perfumers, made repairs. And they fortified Jerusalem as far as the broad wall. So we see here that there's specifically in two guilds, if you will, that were spelled out for participating in this. And obviously, there were probably other guilds that were playing a role. For instance, the bakers, they were so busy baking bread for everyone to do the work that they couldn't themselves participate on the wall directly. But you can think of the goldsmiths and the perfumers. Those were the ones who supplied the basically things for the temple as well as for the rich. And so their schedules were a little bit more flexible, and they actually had time to work on that. In the broad wall, when we go back, you see it's basically just much thicker than the other. Um, Let me jump down to 11. Malchijah, the son of Harum, and Hashub, the son of Pethah Moab, repaired another section as well as the Tower of the Ovens. And this actually is another fortification tower, but it gets its name because that is where all the baker's ovens were. So it was...
Even when they want to stand watch in the summer on top of that.
Yeah, I don't think so. Going on to verse 12, and next to him was Shalom, the son of Halohesh, leader of the half-district of Jerusalem. He and his daughters made repairs. So obviously... they didn't specifically list sons, so perhaps he didn't have any sons. His daughters helped him. Obviously, these weren't the only daughters or women that worked on the wall. It's believed that many did. Hanun and the inhabitants of Zanoah repaired the valley gate. They built it, hung its doors and its bolts, and repaired 1,000 cubits of the wall as far as the refuse gate. So we're down at the southern part now of the wall. And specifically, this must have impressed Nehemiah because he listed specifically what a big section that they actually repaired. And so 1,000 cubits, 500 yards, it's quite a bit. So you can see the refuse gate or dung gate are the same thing, but basically that whole bottom quarter or so is what they worked on. And, of course, the dung gate or refuse gate gets its name, but that is where they took the trash out and dumped it in the valley there. So let me go ahead and read 15. Shalom, the son of Kolahoth. Hosea, leader of the district of Mizpah, repaired the fountain gate, built it, covered it, hung its doors and bolts and bars, and repaired the wall of the pool of Shelah by the king's garden as far as the stairs that go down from the city of David. After him, Nehemiah, so again, this is not Nehemiah the author, the son of Azbuk, leader of the half-district of Benshur, made repairs as far as the place in front of the tombs of David and to the man-made pool, as far as the house of the mighty. After him, the Levites under Rehum, the son of Bani, made repairs. Next to him, Hashbiah, leader of the half district of Keilah, made repairs for his district. And after him, their brethren under Bevi, the son of Henadad, leader of the other half of the district, made repairs. Let me skip on and back to this map here. So we've rounded the bottom, and you can see one thing that I want to point out is there's what's listed as the older wall and the inner wall. And most believe at this time that the older wall was so pulverized and demolished that what Nehemiah did initially was rebuild the inner wall. So and you could see the residences, I didn't circle them all, but the high priest actually lived down away from the temple. And so we're up to the armory now. After him, Baruch, the son of Zabai, carefully repaired the other section from the buttress to the door to the house of Eliashib, the high priest. After him, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Koz, repaired another section from the door of the house of Eliashib to the end of the house of Eliashib. And after him, the priests, the men of the plain, made repairs. After him, Benjamin and Hashub made repairs opposite their house. And after Azariah, the son of Messiah, the son of Ananiah, made repairs by his house. So rereading that, what I want you to see is that Nehemiah wisely chose to, assign workers to an area that was near where they lived, right? Because the last thing you want to do is have the wall breach right where you live. So you would go the extra mile to make sure it was done and done right. I want to jump down to 25. Palal, the son of Uzziah, made repairs opposite the buttress and on the tower, which projects from the king's upper house that was by the court of the prison. After him, Padiah, the son of Parosh, made repairs. Moreover, the Nethinim, who dwelt in Opal. Anybody know what the Nethinim were, who they were? Those were basically the workers that attended to the temple. And I stole this graphic. And you can see the old wall, the outer wall, which is complete in this, and the inner wall, and the temple up top, and then the little upfall where the Nethinim lived. So they were right up next to the temple, which again was where they worked. They were the care keepers besides the priests. They made repairs as far as a place in front of the water gate toward the east and the projecting towers. After them, the Kohites repaired another section. So again, irrespective of what their leaders didn't do, the town people went ahead and repaired another section. I wanted to mention the water gate. The water gate gets its name, obviously, from water. It was one of the sources of water to the temple, but it really gets its name from basically the Feast of the Tabernacles or Sukkot. There was a water libation ceremony where they'd go down to the spring of Gihon and they would bring up in this as part of their festivities, and they would pour the water on the altar and what they called the water libation part of the service. And so that's why it gets its name, in case anybody remembers what I taught on years ago. All right, let me jump down to 31, I guess. And after him, Malachijah, one of the goldsmiths, made repairs as far as the house of the Nethinim, which, again, we saw where that was, and of the merchants. So besides the guilds of goldsmith and perfumers, we obviously had other merchants that were playing a role here in front of the Mipka gate and as far as the upper room at the corner, and between the upper room and the corner as far as the sheep gate, the goldsmiths and the merchants made repairs. So we've now made our complete circle, if you will, around the temple, and I didn't circle everything that we covered, but he's very specific about who took care of what sections. And the Mipka gate that's mentioned as we read is up here labeled as the muster gate. All right, so now we're going to move into chapter 4. Chapter 3, we saw who rebuilt the section of the wall. And basically, chapter 4 picks up where chapter 2 left off, so to speak, time-wise. And this is only 18 verses. So we're going to read through it and then come back. But as I start to read the first 6 verses in our Bible here in chapter 4 are actually included in chapter 3 in the Hebrew Bible. To kind of carry that thought, so keep that in mind. And remember that Sanballat's the Samaritan leader in charge of, I guess the Persian Empire in this little region. But so it happened when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall that he was furious and very indignant and mocked the Jews. And he spoke before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they fortify themselves? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they complete it in a day? Will they revive the stones from the heaps of rubbish, stones that are burned?" Now Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him and said, "Whatever they build, if even a fox goes up on it, it will break down their stone wall." Hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their reproach on their own heads and give them as plunder to the land of captivity. Do not cover their iniquity and do not let their sin be blotted out from before you, for they have provoked you to anger before the builders. So we built the wall, and the entire wall was joined together up to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. So again, those are included in the Hebrew Bible, and now starting chapter or verse 7, this is where the Hebrew chapter 4 starts. Now it happened when Sanballat, the Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites heard the walls of Jerusalem were being restored and the gaps were beginning to be closed that they became very angry. And all of them conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem in great confusion. Nevertheless, we made our prayer to our God, and because of them we set a watch against them day and night. Then Judah said, "The strength of the laborers is failing, and there is so much rubbish that we are not able to build the wall." And our adversaries said, "They will neither know nor see anything till we come into their midst and kill them and cause the work to cease." So it was when the Jews who dwelt near them came that they told us 10 times, "For whatever place you turn, they will be upon us." Therefore, I positioned men behind the lower parts of the wall at the openings, and I set people according to their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles, to the leaders, and to the rest of the people, "Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses." And it happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us that God had brought their plot to nothing, that all of us returned to the wall, everyone to his work. So it was from that time on that half of my servants worked at construction while the other half held their spears, the shields, their bows, and wore armor. And the leaders were behind all the house of Judah. Those who built on the wall and those who carried burdens loaded themselves so that with one hand they worked at construction and with the other hand held a weapon. Every one of the builders had his sword girded at his side as he built, and the one who sounded the trumpet was beside me. Then I said to the nobles, the rulers, and the rest of the people, "The work is great and extensive, and we are separated far from one another on the wall. Whenever you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. Our God will fight for us." So we labored in the work, and half of the men held the spears from daybreak until the stars appeared. At the same time, I also said to people, "Let each man and his servant stay at night in Jerusalem, that they may be our guard by night and a working party by day." So neither I, my brethren, my servants, nor the men of the guard who followed me took off our clothes, except that everyone took them off for washing. So jumping back, I want to call out a few things. So in chapter 2, Sanballat is gone from annoyed to here furious and very indignant. And you can all translate this, carries a little bit more, exceedingly greatly outraged it could be. So again, he's gone from annoyed to now absolutely infuriated. And he chooses to display his anger by mocking the Jews in front of his brethren and the army. And he does that by asking these 5 rhetorical questions. So the first one, what are these feeble Jews doing? And feeble here carries the connotation of decay or withering away, kind of like a people in their last days of existence, which from their point of view, it seemed to make pretty good sense. The second question, will they fortify themselves? Again, this is trying to belittle the Jews by questioning how they'll be able to defend themselves. And second, how could they rebuild this without professional masons? It's more or less what he's getting at. The third taunt, if you will they offer sacrifices? This most likely is referring to the sacrifice of thanksgiving and dedication, which would come when they completed it. So again, here he's more or less questioning whether or not they would ever be able to complete it. Will they be able to complete it in a day? And this gets at the same thing. How will they, he's implying, will they even finish it, and how can they do it so fast? And will they revive the stones from the heaps of rubbish, stones that are burned? And so here he's basically getting at how thorough Nebuchadnezzar's destruction of the temple was, where it was, you know, just dust in some places. Then we saw that Tobiah added to this insult, if you will, and said, whatever they build, even if a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall. And so basically implying the weight of a small animal will make the thing fall down. And right, remember this, in order to breach a wall, you needed some sort of like a siege engine. You either had to build up dirt on the side to be able to breach it, or you had to have ladders or something. And so he's saying we don't have to worry about that, just it's going to fall down. Nehemiah probably wasn't present to hear this, but he hears about it, and notice what his first response is. His first response is to pray. Chapter 4, or verse 4, hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their reproach on their own heads and give them as plunder to a land of captivity. Do not cover their iniquity, and do not let their sin be blotted out from before you, for they have provoked you to anger before the builders. So he's here reminding them of basically the Abrahamic covenant, and specifically promised to bless those who bless them and curse those who curse them. And then going on in 5, he requests that their deeds not be forgiven. And so these taunts didn't have any effect, basically. And we see in verse 6 that they continued to build the wall, and that didn't settle well with Sanballat. So he gets the surrounding nations, the Arabs, the Ammonites, the Ashdodites, and basically he puts this plot together to try and kill them. And so, again, what is Nehemiah's response? Verse 9, he prays again. Nevertheless, we made our prayer to our God, and because of them, we set a watch against them day and night. So one thing that Nehemiah does is he not only prays and says, God, you know, it's all in your hands. He prays and he does what he can to do the work, or to finish the work. We saw in verse 10 here that the laborers were getting dissuaded with what was going on. And they began to doubt themselves. And in verse 12, it's hard to pick up here, but it says, so it was when the Jews who dwelt near them came, they told us 10 times. So basically, there are Jews that live close enough to Sanballat and the other opponents, if you will, and they heard that an attack was imminent, so they would tell Nehemiah and they would prepare for it. And many believe that this 10 times is an idiom, basically just meaning way more than 10, but at least 10 times it happened. So they're repeatedly preparing for this surprise attack that hasn't come. Again, so what did Nehemiah do? He positioned men behind the lower parts of the wall at the openings, and he set his people according to their families, and they were armed with everything they had. And he senses in verse 14 their anxiety, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And so he gives this impassioned speech here that says, and I looked and arose and said to the nobles, to the leaders, and the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. The brethren here basically is country. So fight for your country and your family. And in verse 15, word gets back to the enemies that they are aware of this pending surprise attack, and it's kind of dissuades the Sanballat and their alliance of nations, so that they basically know their surprise is out of the bag. And so again, what does first thing that Nehemiah do? He gives credit to God. God had brought their plot to nothing. And then in verse 20 here, the work is great and extensive, and we were separated far from one another on the wall. Whenever you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us here. Our God will fight for us. So again, he's using the trumpet here as that shofar that the ram's horn is curled, and that would be a call, signal call to battle, call to arms. And what he does here is he reminds those that are rebuilding that God that they are not alone, that God would fight for them. And down in verse 23, he implies that so neither I, my brethren, my servants, nor the men of the guard would follow. Who followed me took off our clothes, except that everyone took them off for washing. So when he set up the split the group into two, and they stopped going home at night, those that were not working on the temple were serving as guards. They wore their armor. Even those that were working, they basically, whenever they could, they either carried their sword, or if they were moving rock, they kind of had one rock in one hand for a weapon. At the same time, they were building another one, or building the wall. And so 23 basically gets at, or the section that they no longer went home, and the only time they took off their armor was when they were washing. Otherwise, they slept with their armor on, so that if the attack, which never came, they'd be ready. And that ends chapter 4. And things look pretty good here now, with the attack dissuaded, but chapter 5, Nehemiah has some more troubles, and that'll be next week. Any questions on that? All right, thank you.